Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 7th of December 2013 as we discuss the world of sports for the course of the next hour. A busy sports weekend, a big-time football weekend, of course, with the championship Saturday with the colleges. We'll find out who will play for the BCS championship this evening. Of course, also NFL have two huge matchups that we'll look at as well with the NFL. Also NFL picks. Lot to do, a lot going on in the world of sports, baseball, NBA. So a busy program to say the least. But we begin, of course, with the life and the celebration of one Nelson Mandela, who of course passed away on Thursday. At the age of 95, just one of the most influential men that, you know, that you can think of in terms of what he did, the sacrifices he made. And again, 95 years old, you live 95 years old, you've lived not a good life, you lived a great life. Mandela, he was sick for a while, as we all know, but still, even, you know, the last pictures that you saw of him, he looked great. Somebody 95 years old, he was, you know, didn't look like he was 95, to be honest with you. I mean, took care of himself. And he, you know, again, this, we're talking about somebody who even the star of stars, celebrities, famous people that we think are famous, looked up to him and just revered him in terms of who he was. And, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, looking at some of the stuff he did. And, of course, the one thing that stands out in terms of in his whole life, and he did so many wonderful things, is, of course, being sent to prison for 27 years, basically fighting for something that he believed in. And I thought about, I wouldn't spend 27 minutes in prison for something I believed in. You told me I had to switch, you know, from Nike to Adidas. To avoid prison or something like that, I'm wearing Adidas. I mean, I'm not going to prison. I'm not going to be honest with you. I'm just trying to avoid prison at all costs. So for a guy to basically sacrifice, you know, a little less than a third of his life for what he believed in speaks volumes of what just the kind of man he was. I mean, you think about, and it doesn't happen often. You think about Muhammad Ali and sacrificing, you know, basically his prime championship years. In turn, he was undefeated when he went to prison for not wanting to, of course, fight in the army and didn't believe, it was against his religious beliefs. So he sacrificed, you know, his prime of his career. Lost a lot of money. Was not a popular decision. You know, draft dodger, coward. You know, some of the things that people would call him. But he ends up being more revered after the fact, and maybe when his career was long over, for showing that amount of courage and belief in terms of what he thought, and then, you know, than ever before. And I think, you know, Mandela, you know, his highest point probably may have been the lowest point for many, and that was being in prison. For all those years, he was, you know, was a hero, you know. Once he got out, and I remember, of course, I don't remember when he was in prison. I was too young. I wasn't even born when he first went to prison. But I remember when he was released from prison, and just how big of a story it was as I was 10, 11 years old. So, you know, we're talking about, again, you're talking about a guy who just, of course, was known all over the world as famous as anybody on this planet, and as revered as anybody on this planet. Here's what Denzel Washington had to say about in a recent interview about Mandela. Maybe an interview about three. This is about 3 or 4 years ago, but not too long ago. We don't, for whatever reason, thought I had that audio, but did a bad job by me. I thought I had that particular audio, but I'll give you what he said. Denzel was doing an interview not too long ago, and Denzel said that Mandela used to call him on every New Year's. So one particular time he calls him up. Says, Denzel, I want your wife to cook some fried chicken for me. So Denzel's like, sure, Paul, let her hook up some fried chicken and whatever, side dishes that she made. So basically, she cooks, and Denzel, Mandela's arrival to Denzel's house somewhere in Hollywood and somewhere in California. And you had helicopters and you had just everybody, helicopters, and this is Mandela here, so it was a big thing, of course, and Denzel said that there were about at least 50 or so people at his house, celebrities, Oprah Winfrey, we're talking Sylvester Stallone and a number of other celebrities and famous people at his house, just, in awe, basically in awe of Mandela, and Mandela was speaking, and none of these people, nobody said a word, nobody basically moved. And Denzel was just talking about how he had a picture of that particular, in his house. And just, Denzel was just talking about, they asked Denzel, the reason why they talked about Mandela is they asked Denzel, who was the most probably important person you've met in your life? And Mandela stands out as that particular person. Of course, it makes you want to go see the movie. Idris Elba is going to be playing Mandela. And that's going to be coming up, I think, Christmas Eve. So that's certainly a must see now. And of course, you have Danny Glover, who played Mandela a long time ago in a HBO series, not a series, but an HBO original film. It was very good. About 20, 25 years ago. It was a while. I was a young kid. So those two things you might want to check out now. Again, 95 years old, and certainly he will never be forgotten, one Nelson Mandela. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Again, a busy sports weekend, an exciting program, a lot going on. We're just getting started here. We'll be right back. Minutes after the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. 347-215-6180. Of course, I forgot to mention that you can always hit me up at facebook.com/SurrealQuinn or go to my website, SurrealGeraldQuinn.com, or follow me on Twitter at William Gerald. Yes, at William Gerald. Again, busy program, a lot to do Saturday here as we look forward to a championship Saturday. Of course, there are three matchups that are going to decide who plays in the national championship. We'll begin with the number one Seminoles, who, again, of course, will be fully loaded with the Jameis Winston decision. That he was basically not acquitted, but would not be charged with sexual battery. That came out Thursday. And listen, you knew, when they announced a press conference on what the decision is, that there's not going to be a charge. I mean, that they're not going to let. If he's a rapist, they're going to try to get him off the streets as soon as possible. I didn't think he was going to be charged. There was just not enough evidence. Prosecution, it has to be no shadow of a doubt if they're going to prosecute a case. Now, again, I'm not saying that a crime did not take place. Only three people were in that room, or two people were in that room. Between those three or two and God, only people that know what happens. So I want to be very sensitive towards the young lady that was involved in the situation. It's a situation that just happens far too often in sports, especially now in college sports. We'll talk more about that on the how to not solve it, but how I think in the NCAA could go move forward and try and preventing those kind of situations. But again, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. But Jameis Winston certainly now will be the Heisman Trophy winner. Florida State is the favorite not only to win this game. They're going to win this game in a landslide, but their favorite certainly will be favored against anybody come in the Rose Bowl for the national championship. So, again, Florida State, Duke, if you're a Duke football fan, you're just happy to be here, and you're just happy that you won 10 games. I mean, Duke is a 28-point underdog in this game. Florida State, if you think Florida State is going to take Duke lightly, then you haven't been watching Florida State this year. Florida State has destroyed everybody. They didn't take Idaho lightly, but Bethune-Cookman lightly. So they're not going to take Duke, a team. They respect Duke. They know Duke can throw the ball around a little bit. And the bottom line is it's a game to go to the national championship. They're not going to take this lightly. If anything, maybe the weather could be a factor. You're hoping Duke, if you're Duke, you're hoping that it's windy conditions, that Florida State is forced to be a running team and not throw the ball all over the place. So that maybe the weather slows. The only thing that slows down Florida State is possibly will be the weather. That's it. It will not be the Duke defense. I guarantee you that. So, again, I expect Florida State to win by at least, you expect 42-21, something like that. Fourth quarter, you don't expect to be watching this game. And I think it will be a certain shock if you're watching this game in the fourth quarter. Ohio State, Michigan State, very interesting game. I told you that Florida State is favored by 28 points, in some cases 29. Michigan State is only favored by 5.5 points Ohio State is only favored by 5.5 over Michigan State. Michigan State is considered to have one of the best defenses in the country. Michigan State is amazingly, and this is how weak the Big Ten is, that you have a Michigan State team that's known for football be ranked only 10 and be undefeated, be 8-0 in the conference and 11-1. Michigan State only lost one game, and that was the Notre Dame, 11-1, and they only ranked 10. So that just shows you the lack of respect and how weak the Big Ten has been this year. Again, the question in this game is, can Michigan State score enough points to hang with Ohio State? They're not going to hold Ohio State to 10 points, 6 points, 14 points. They're going to have to put at least 24 points on the board to beat Ohio State, minimum, maybe even more than that. Ohio State's the offense is too dynamic, suspect defense, but they have a tremendous offense with Braxton Miller, the running back, some good receivers, good offensive line. You expect Ohio State to win. Will I be shocked if Michigan State won? No, because I don't think Ohio State is very good. Ohio State, at the end of the season, really did not play good football going down and stretch against some of these weaker opponents. But I expect Ohio State to win this game. Then you have, of course, Mississippi taking on, Missouri. Let me get that right. Missouri, who amazingly is ranked, I don't know how Missouri's ranked below Alabama, to be honest with you, at number five, taking on Auburn at number three. And the question is going to be after this game, if let's say Florida State and Ohio State win, because if either Florida State or Ohio State loses, then the winner of the Missouri-Auburn game will play for the national championship. That's all there is to it. I mean, there's no two ways about it. But the question is going to be, especially if Ohio State struggles, is will the winner of this game, especially if it's Auburn, and I think Missouri is just as deserving of being in a national championship game or arguing for a national championship game than Auburn, because Missouri has had a fabulous year. I don't think people realize how good Missouri has been. And Missouri has one loss, okay, and that was to South Carolina, at South Carolina, in double overtime without their quarterback. Franklin, of course, was hurt. He got hurt in the Georgia game. Either Georgia or Florida game, but he got hurt and didn't play in that game. Missouri's had a fabulous season again. But the problem is they didn't beat Alabama. They didn't beat Alabama, and they didn't have the wild finish against Georgia. Everybody's going to remember those two wild finishes, miracle finishes from Auburn against Alabama and against Georgia. But Missouri has been as impressive, if not more impressive, than Auburn. And this is going to be a very close game. I don't see either one of these teams running away from each other. This is a fourth quarter, last 5 minutes type game. But the question, of course, is going to be, who will play for the national championship? If, will one of these teams play for the national championship, even if Ohio State and Florida State win? I'm going to answer that question. I'm going to say no, that neither one of these teams will play, that they need some help, because you're talking about two big names in Florida. Well, look at Florida State's plan if they win. There's no way Ohio State would have won about 25 straight games. There's no way that they're keeping out an Ohio State for a one-loss SEC team when Ohio State's won 25 straight games. It's not going to happen. It's just not. Like, you can forget about it. And to be honest with you, regardless of what you think about the Big Ten and Ohio State, I mean, I can argue Ohio State's better than Auburn. I can argue Ohio State's better than Missouri. It's not that big a difference between those three teams to say one of those teams stands out amongst the other. So to me, the tiebreak is the fact that Ohio State's undefeated. And it's still something, regardless of schedule, too, it's still a lot, something to be said about going undefeated. So I think if Ohio State and Florida State win, they both will play for the national championship. So that should be two very good matchups. The Florida State game is, Duke should be just happy to be there. Also, and this doesn't have any national championship implications, but the Arizona State-Stanford game will be a very good game in terms of the Pac-12 championship. So looking forward to it. Championship Saturday in the world of college football. We'll see what happens and how the BCS shakes out. The last season of the BCS, and think about it, Florida State started, the BCS started with Florida State in the national championship the first 3 years. Is, unless it's a miracle on top of miracles, is going to end with Florida State being in the national championship. Still to come, we have this morning's headlines coming up, and the Redskin report as well on this latest edition of the Cyril Gorin Review. We'll be right back. Like I think I'm sick of cocaine, but I'm edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, 347-215-6180 is the call number. Of course, Robinson Cano lands with the Seattle Mariners, 10 years, $240 million, the third largest contract in the history of baseball, only tied with Albert Pujols' contract from 2012 when he went to the Angels. Only two contracts ahead of it. The A-Rod contracts that were, of course, the one he signed with Texas back in 2001, which was 10 years, $252 million, and the one he signed with the Yankees in 2007, a contract that they are still lamenting to this day, which I believe was 10 years at $270 million, I want to say. Yeah, $270 million. Listen, Robinson Cano, best second baseman in baseball, offensive second, just a great offensive, one of the top 5 to 10 players in all of baseball. We know this. He's not worth $240 million, even in market value. Remember, he just turned 30, okay? And haven't we learned these individual players, I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Albert Pujols. I don't care if it's Alex Rodriguez. I don't care if it's Barry Bonds in his prime. These individual guys don't win you championships, okay? They don't. I mean, they don't. Like, if you don't have the pitching, forget it. It's all about the pitching. Now, would you pay a pitcher $240 million? Yeah, you would. Would you give Clayton Kershaw $240 million for 10 years? Even though I don't like 10 years, but you probably would have to do it because he's a pitcher and he impacts the game. Just the impact of a game from a big-time pitcher versus a big-time hitter is not even close. It's not even close. So I think the Yankees absolutely made the right move in not giving him that kind of contract. There were talks that the Yankees went to 7 years, $175 million, which was a fair deal. I don't blame the Yankees for not, you know, wanting to go as far, wanting to go 10 years and wanting to give him, you know, and wanting to go in the $200 million over in that range. I can't blame him at all for that. You got to have pitching. I mean, that's the bottom line. Seattle wants a big name. They want to be able to sell seats. You know, they want to make a splash. They have a ton. You know, these teams across baseball now with television money and revenue sharing now have more money to spend. Did you ever think you would see the day where Seattle outbid the New York Yankees? I didn't think I would see it, but that's what happened here. They outbid the New York Yankees. But and also the bottom line, a little side story to this is Yankees are on a budget, okay? Yankees want to get to that magic number, which is 189. Yankees, 189, if they have a payroll that does not exceed $189 million, then they have the opportunity to save over $100 million in terms of luxury taxes for the next 2 years. Don't think for a second that was not a factor in Robinson Cano not getting signed. But again, I have no problem with what the Yankees did. Seattle, you know, makes a big splash. I would not have signed them to that kind of deal. I think Seattle was kind of bidding against themselves. But when you are in Seattle, I guess you have to overbid to get a guy to come out there 3,000 miles away from the East Coast. Give Jay-Z credit. I mean, he maximized the contract of his deal. He maximized his player's contract, basically got his client's contract, and the value. And I think he got more than what Cano was going to get. Nobody else was going to give Cano this kind of money. Make no mistake about it. There were not 10, 12 teams. Now, first of all, they don't have these teams don't have that type of money to give Robinson Cano. Okay, so nobody was going to give him that kind of money. Yankees go out and get Beltran, McCann, Ellsbury, sign Kelly Johnson, and you got a sense when Kelly Johnson was signed that probably was the end of Robinson Cano being there, more than likely. But you know, there's still a chance, but that was kind of like Robinson Cano insurance. So we'll see what happens. Again, we'll see. Yankees still aren't done yet. They still have probably. Well, go out and get us the front line starting pitcher or a closer rotation guy in terms of being a starting pitcher and some bullpen and maybe another bullpen guy as well. So, but, you know, we'll see. But, again, I cannot blame the Yankees at all for letting go Cano and not matching that deal. Kobe Bryant will return Sunday against the Toronto Raptors. You knew something was up when NBA TV to televise a Raptors-Lakers game, and then, you know, like with no Kobe, it would make zero sense to have those two teams on. So you knew something was up a couple of days ago when you saw that. There was a talk earlier in the week that he might come back against the Kings. He, you know, put that aside on Thursday, so he is coming back Sunday. Lakers are playing good basketball, played excellent basketball without him. I mean, there's no way that you had told me before the season Lakers would be 10-9 right now. I would have laughed in your face and would have took your money. How much you want to bet? How much? But the Lakers are playing pretty good basketball, sharing the ball. We'll see what Kobe looks like coming back. Lakers, of course, Lakers organization dominant Kobe. I mean, what else are they going to say? But again, we'll see what happens with that. Texans fired Gary Kubiak after 8 years. Kubiak 61-64 in his 8-year tenure. Rough year for Gary Kubiak and the Texans, 2-11, worst record in the NFL. He has a minor stroke, and they lost a bunch of close games. Matter of fact, they've lost 7 straight games. I believe 7 of their 9 straight losses have been. They were 2-0, so they have 11 straight losses. even when they were 2-0, they didn't look good. So you didn't think. I mean, I thought that they could be a playoff team, but then you knew that they were not a Super Bowl contender coming out of the gate at 2-0 the way they were looking, but you never, ever thought it was going to come to this, where 11 straight coaching getting fired, and just been a horrible year, one of those years to forget for the Houston Texans. Of course, Bob McNair, the owner, wants to get the process started on get a jump on these college coaches, and he's going to go for a big name without question. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, Kubiak had 8 years there, plenty of time to get the job done, man. So it's not a situation. I mean, you feel bad for him in terms of with the stroke he had, but he was given more than enough time to get that thing right, to get that thing right. And Houston goes into the rest of the season, into the offseason, with the two questions that you don't want to have as a franchise, and that is, who's your quarterback? Who's your head coach? Who's your starting quarterback? Those are two questions you don't want to have going into a season. They have both. They have both of those questions hanging over the franchise's head. The franchise's head moving forward. 347-214-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, Redskin Report, and also the NBA. Some early excitement in terms of the NBA. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this last edition of the Cyril Krim Review. We'll be right back.
Bye.
back to this latest edition of the Cyril Coon Review, 347-215-6180. The Washington Redskins, of course, coming in at 3-9, just having lost four straight games, and, you know, basically now playing for pride, playing to see who's going to be here next year, including the coach, playing, I guess, for stats, because, you know, I hear this week, you know, Jim Hazlitt talking about Arakpo and Kerrigan getting 10 sacks as if that really matters. Unless Hazlitt has an interest in some contract incentives that Kerrigan or Arakpo have. I don't understand why the way your defense has played this year, I don't understand why you even mention individual stats. I don't get it. I don't even know on a winning team. All right, again, you can get away with it if you were 9-3. You'd be like, oh, that's nice. They haven't the defense playing well. The team's winning. Okay, we can let that go. If you're on a 3-9 team and your defense is giving up about 30 points a game, and you're talking about sack numbers, I mean, please. I don't want to hear about it. Especially you're talking about Arakpo, who I don't even listen. Arakpo over the past four games, okay, he has 5.5 sacks over the past four games. Okay, whoop-de-doo. Let's give him Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, please. Brian Arakpo this year and for his career, let's be honest, has not lived up to what we thought Brian Arakpo was going to be. He's had spots of brilliance, but they have been few and far between. First of all, he hasn't been able to stay on the field for the majority of his career. This year, he's been relatively healthy, but he has not impacted it. You don't think, I mean, when we think of young, talented defensive players across the league, his name does not enter that list when I think of it. I mean, J.J. Watt and Eric Berry and guys of that nature, you know, Alden Smith, Brian Reichel's name does not enter that list, bottom line. Okay, Richard Sherman. So, I don't know, maybe Hazlitt's trying to pump him up. I don't know, but I did not need to hear about that on a 3-9 football team about stats and what certain guys are doing. Please. So the Redskins coming off, again, another disappointing loss to the New York Giants, a game which they were once up 14-0, a tale of two halves for RG3, great first half, bad in the second. Really not bad in the second, but, you know, Giants made adjustments. I mean, Giants started sending more rushers, getting after it. Justin Tuck, I mean, just couldn't be blocked. I mean, made Justin Tuck look like Deacon Jones in the second half. I mean, geez. So they had Giants had five sacks in the second half. Alfred Morris, again, only 11 carries for 26 yards. And, again, if I have to hear another excuse on why we didn't in a close game, in a game that wasn't dominated by the Giants in terms of time possession or plays ran, why didn't we run Alfred Morris? And how many times did Mike Shanahan said the defense dictated, you know, how many times that Alfred Morris gets, how many carries Alfred Morris gets? I mean, please, give me a break. All right, like, it's enough already. So he only gets 11 carries, and the Redskins couldn't do anything in the second half, 3 points. Just, you know, the offense was putrid in the second half, and they lost, you know, came up short. And again, now, you know, the Redskins, for the second time in 3 weeks, catch a team, just like they caught San Francisco at a bad time when San Francisco was on a two-game losing streak. They catch a team even now, even more desperate for a win in terms of the Kansas City Chiefs, who are on a three-game losing streak. And let's be fair. Kansas City may not be a Super Bowl contender, but they are a very good football team. And those losses that they've had haven't been blown out. I mean, they've lost. Look at those losses. They lost two games. They lost two times to Denver. Okay, Denver's better, and they lost once to San Diego, who we know can be dangerous and capable of playing with anybody on a given afternoon. Lost a tight game to San Diego. So, they're more than due to play well. And, again, I think they're catching Kansas City at the wrong time. I think the Redskins do somewhat match up with Kansas City because Kansas City is not a team that can throw the ball all over the place. They don't have great weapons. They have some decent weapons on the outside, but the strength of Kansas City is their physicality, offensive line, the running game, ball control offense, the defense, which hasn't played well in the last 3 weeks, by the way. But that's Kansas City's strength. You know, they're not a team that's going to throw the ball all over the field. But with that being said, the Redskins, again, are going to be an uphill battle. At home. You wonder how many people are going to be actually at the stadium. It's supposed to be cold Sunday. It's supposed to be cold and rainy. So I don't know. I don't get a sense that there'll be a great home field advantage for the Redskins in that particular game. Angry Kansas City team. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, at this point, you're watching to see who could possibly be on the team next year, including the coach. Reed Dowdy should play. He'll be back. Redskins can use all the help that they can get in that secondary, and Kansas City is going to be looking to snap their three-game losing streak. Still to come on this latest edition of the Cyril Coon Review, we will talk NBA. It's been a very, very good start to the NBA season. We'll talk about that on this latest edition of the Cyril Coon Review. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Coon Review as we get into some NBA here. Good start to the NBA season. Unfortunately, again, of course, Derrick Rose going down certainly was a blow to the Bulls and also the league as well. Now there's some talk that he's talking about possibly coming back if he's healthy before the playoffs, which would be a major mistake. When you've been ruled out for the season, just sit out the season. I mean, I think some of this is kind of trying to make up for last year in terms of, there are people questioning his toughness, including me. So I'd be very careful. You're the Bulls. You certainly did not want to hear about that. If you've been ruled out for the season, there's a reason why you've been ruled out for the season. The Eastern Conference, the Eastern Conference, is as bad as it's ever been. Only three teams over 500, and Atlanta just got over 500 yesterday, last night, or Thursday, at 11-10. A matter of health. It's the only thing. Only injuries will keep Indiana and Miami meeting for the Eastern Conference Finals. Only injuries. Those two teams are so far above and beyond any other team in the Eastern Conference. It's not funny. I've seen, you remember those years where the Lakers and San Antonio were dominant and trading championships, it seems like, year in and year out. But I've never seen it like this where, the Western Conference, you have about 11 teams with winning records and two teams, in Minnesota, you have Minnesota that's just one game under 500. So I've never seen the discrepancy this big. Look at what's going on in New York with Brooklyn and the Knicks. And, you know, you wonder, I mean, getting to Brooklyn, you know, you wonder how long they're going to keep Jason Kidd there. You losing to the Knicks by 30 points at home following a beatdown that they took by the Denver Nuggets. To me, I said this on Facebook, I said I would have fired Jason Kidd during the game. I don't think Jason Kidd's an NBA coach. I think he's in over his head. I think it was a bad fit to begin with, having him coach a team who's ready to win now rather than him coach a team that's young and up and not up and coming, but just young and rebuilding. Like, he should be coaching, you know, the Orlando Magic. And to be honest with you, I don't think he should be coaching at all, to be honest with you. Because, again, no prior coaching experience. None. I mean, how many years does Bob McAdoo have as a Miami assistant? And he couldn't, you know, what, 15? 10, 15 years as Miami assistant? Maybe longer than that. I think he might have been there when Pat Riley was there. So, I mean, you got to pay your dues. Yeah, I mean, I think Doug Collins talked about it a couple weeks ago. The head coaching position in the NBA for some reason recently has been devalued. We know it's a players' league, and it is a players' league, and it'll always be a players' league. But you still got to have a coach that knows what he's doing. I mean, you got to have somebody that can steer the ship. You know, Jason Kidd gets rid of Lawrence Frank and then cites, you know, what, philosophical differences? You hired him. You begged him to come here. They recruited Lawrence Frank. Lawrence Frank is the highest paid assistant coach in the league. Lawrence Frank, as an assistant, is making almost $1 million a year as an assistant. And now you have philosophical differences. You know what it was? It was Lawrence Frank was like, what are you doing? Like, really? Lawrence Frank is a head coach. He wasn't a great head coach, but he is a legitimate NBA head coach who probably looked at Jason Kidd like he was crazy with some of the stuff that that Jason Kidd was trying to do. That's what happened. You have a guy demoted to video guy. You're not even comfortable with him being on the bench. That's how, you know, you're that insecure about him being on your same bench where you have him demoted. So Jason Kidd they need to make that move quick just to cut your losses. With all that said about the Eastern and Western Conference, the two best teams still are in the Eastern Conference, in Indiana and Miami. I think those are the two best teams in the league. I think Indiana is the team to beat in the league. I think it's going to be an Indiana Pacers year. I think it's going to be a Pacers year when the Bulls, you know, lost Derrick Rose. That's why I, you know, said, you know what, it's going to be Indiana's year. So, yeah, with all that being said, and as great as the Western Conference has been, I still think, again, the two best teams are in the Eastern Conference. I'm not sure about Portland. I know Portland's very good, but I'm not ready to throw them into a team, mix of Oklahoma City, San Antonio as a contender. I'll be very careful about that. They're middle of the pack defensively. Offensively, they're as good as anybody we know. With Aldridge playing, you know, all NBA level right now, Lillard is very good. Probably will make the All-Star team. So they can score with anybody. But to say that they're contenders to come out the West, I guess you would have to say they're contenders. But I mean, again, would I pick them to come out the West? No. I don't think they can get to the NBA Finals. I'll put it to you that way. Playing great. But I don't think they can get to the finals. But again, the difference between the discrepancy between the Eastern and Western Conference is at an all-time high. I've never seen it this bad. But despite that, you still had some great NBA individual games. You know, Golden State's been involved with about two or three of them. great game with Portland and Indiana earlier this week. Paul George had 43 points. Portland's a good story. What's going on in New York, even though it's not good basketball, it's just intriguing because just those are two highest payrolls in the sport, in, you know, in all of basketball, and they're both terrible. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, NFL picks for a week 14 in the league where no contract is guaranteed. We'll be right back on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Week number 14 in the league, where no contract is guaranteed. And as as Dave Johnson used to say on those famous Triple Crown horse races, and down the stretch we come. December, we'll see the teams who are about it versus the teams who are looking forward to draft time. Game number one, Indianapolis and Cincinnati, two teams that by default will be in the playoffs because they're in two bad divisions. Both at 8-4. And to be honest with you, I'm not impressed with either one of these teams at 8-4. Neither one of these teams are playing good football right now. Both quarterbacks struggling, especially Andy Dalton, who looked awful in the last month. Cincinnati is a 6-point favorite at home. It's supposed to be cold, supposed to snow. Indianapolis, you know, built for the dome. He's going to have a hard time here. I'll take Cincinnati to cover, and I think the score is 21-10, Cincinnati. Again, Indianapolis not playing good football either. They can't run the ball. The Reggie Wayne injury has crippled Indianapolis. Let's be honest. Reggie Wayne, I knew Reggie Wayne is a very good player, and borderline Hall of Fame player, but I did not know that he would have this kind of effect once he got injured. There's no way that I could ever envision their offense struggling the way it struggled without Reggie Wayne. But it is not the same offense, not by a long stretch since he got hurt. And on the road, outdoors, cold weather, I think Indianapolis will struggle mightily, and Cincinnati will get the win. Game number two. Giants travel to San Diego. San Diego team that could throw the ball all over the place. Giants are very good against the run, but against the pass is another story. You're talking about a cross-country trip, short week, has a chance to be a recipe for a disaster. San Diego is a 3-point favorite. I think San Diego will win this and then some. I think San Diego, again, is one of those teams that get Jekyll and Hyde, but they have played well against the NFC East. They beat Dallas. They beat Philly. Should have beat the Redskins. I like San Diego in this game. Phillip Rivers will have a huge game against the Giants. I think he's going to just light the Giants secondary up. Again, Giants have not been able to generate a pass rush minus, you know, the one half against the Redskins last week. And I'll take San Diego with the points to cover somewhere, 27-21. That'll be a competitive game. Be a competitive game, but I like San Diego to take out the Giants. Game number three, Detroit traveling to Philadelphia. Two teams that are very explosive offensively. Detroit now has had 10 days off since Thanksgiving. Had a very impressive win over the Green Bay Packers on 40-10 on Thanksgiving Day. Eagles are playing excellent football right now, fighting for the division against the Dallas Cowboys. Just The Eagles are barely, almost borderline a pick'em in this game based on the line, which is only 2.5. Eagles recently snapped their home losing streak. Now they've won 2 straight games at home. Again, very tough game to pick. I'm going to go with the Lions. I think the Lions, I'm going to go with the Lions because I think you can move the ball on the Eagles. I think Reggie Bush can have a big game. I like the Lions. For whatever, again, the Lions are as up and down as any team in the league. But my gut feeling says the Lions will come out and win one of these wild games. This will be a high-scoring game. This has 31-28, 34-31 written all over it. I'll take Detroit with the outright upset. So, Cincinnati to cover against Indianapolis. Indianapolis struggling without Reggie Wayne. San Diego taking advantage of a giant short week and a suspect secondary. And Detroit to continue its push towards a NFC North division title and upset and to beat Philadelphia in a what I think will be a shootout. One other NFL note before we get to a break. No Aaron Rodgers, of course. And I think if you're Green Bay, you should shut him down for the rest of the season. That's just what I just have my opinion. So no Aaron Rodgers as they will take on the beleaguered Atlanta Falcons. When we come back, we will look at 2 primetime matchups that could decide home field advantage. We'll go a long way in deciding home field advantage. We'll talk about that on coming up on this latest edition of the Central Corner Review. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Serial Corner Review, 347-215-6180. 2 big-time matchups in the prime-time slots. Not the prime-time slots, because one of them is in the prime-time slots, Carolina at New Orleans. San Francisco, Seattle, of course, will be a 425 kickoff. Being able to see it in San Francisco, Seattle, taking on Seattle, will be the game is at San Francisco, of course. San Francisco is not going to win the division, but for their psyche, they need this game. First of all, they need to slow down this Seattle Seahawks train, which ran over the New Orleans Saints last Monday. Seattle is playing great football right now. I think Seattle is the best team in the league, the most complete team in the league right now. And you just need to you need to slow them down because that's a team, if you're San Francisco, that you're going to have to get through more than likely to get to the Super Bowl if you want to get another chance at going to the Super Bowl and winning it. And, San Francisco needs to win this game for their own psyche because the last 2 times they played Seattle, they've been, frankly, embarrassed. Now, both games have been at Seattle, which is almost impossible to beat, as the Saints learned at home. But San Francisco needs to win this game at home. They'll be relatively healthy. They forget about great showing. They need to win this game again to kind of slow Seattle down. So it should be a very good game. Seattle is at 11-1, already clinched a playoff berth. With this win, I'm assuming with this win will clinch out. No, with this win they will clinch a division. Will clinch a division at worst a number two seed in the playoffs. Carolina and New Orleans. This to me game is much bigger for New Orleans than it is Carolina. Remember, they still have to play at Carolina again. So even if you lost this game for Carolina, you still have an opportunity to win the division by splitting the season series with New Orleans. If you're in New Orleans, you need to wipe the taste of that Seattle beatdown out of your mouth, like immediately, and nothing would go further. Nothing more. You can do anything more than to be a divisional opponent at home that's right on that is tied for you for the division lead and right now playing great football. Like, if you're Carolina and New Orleans, you know that you're fighting for the number two slot in the NFC for home field advantage. So you're fighting for a bye week, division bye week, a lot on the line in this particular game. Again, Carolina is playing great football right now. Cam Newton should begin receiving MVP consideration. I don't think he's been given enough credit for what Carolina is doing. But right now, New Orleans needs this win to erase what happened last Monday night, which was just an avalanche. I did not expect it. I thought New Orleans could upset Seattle, but how wrong was I? So both home teams, I think, need to win, San Francisco and New Orleans, for different reasons. Both home teams need to win. 347-215-6180. A couple entertainment notes. Because of the Thanksgiving holiday, of course, we didn't have an NFL show. We didn't have a show last week in terms of Saturday morning wake up call, Saturday morning, Serial Equipment Review. So I didn't get a chance to talk about two things, Paul Walker and Boardwalk Empire. Real quick, just a tragedy with Paul Walker, 40 years old. A guy who was one half a part of one of the great movie franchises of all time. I mean, the Fast and Furious franchise has turned into a billion-dollar enterprise, basically. And to be honest with you, I don't know where they're gonna go now. I don't know how far they're gonna go now with it. They'll finish, Fast 7, of course, but they could have made about 8 or 9 more of these movies with Paul Walker living. I mean, the story is never ending. It's like you can't do enough of these. And just the irony of it, crashing in a car. From what I understand, he was a tremendous driver. I mean, this guy was in a lot of celebrity races. He owned his own stock car. He owned a stock car team. Just you hear stuff like, I didn't want to believe it. I was hoping, of course, that it was a internet hoax in terms of, we've seen it over the course of the last 3 or 4 years on Twitter. Once every few months or so, somebody says, this celebrity has died, and it turns out not to be true. And I was hoping beyond hope that was the case with Paul Walker. But again, once it was confirmed by his people, by his own people, then, of course, you knew that it was not the case. And just again, 40 years old, 15-year-old daughter, just it's a tragedy, just to say the least. And certainly thoughts and prayers go out to his people, to his peoples. And what an episode of Boardwalk Empire in terms of to end the season. What an episode. It was just a brilliant season finale. All my predictions, except with the exception of Knox being killed, were done. We're wrong. I thought Narcisse would go. I thought Eli would go. But they keep Narcisse. They keep Eli. Send Eli out to Chicago. Chalky loses his daughter. Fairware Daddy Blues. Makes sense with what happened with Eli and Chalky. Harold, they kill Harold. I mean, oh, my goodness. Harold, he had to go. His story had ran out. But, such a great character. that they took off, but it had to be done. Again, this will be a very – this is a lot of people like this season better than last season. I'm not going to go that far, but the last six episodes of Boardwalk Empire this season were off the charts. Like I said, from the old Ship of Zion on, it was game on for Boardwalk Empire. So overall, I think it was a great, excellent season. The best finale that they've had, in my opinion. We're going to take this phone call to end the program, something that we normally don't do, but we're going to do it anyway. Caller, what's on your mind?
You don't take calls?
Well, the show is over.
Well, you can still go into overtime. We can discuss a little things that for your listeners and download a little extra overtime. How you doing, my friend?
I took your call.
How you doing?
Good.
My name is Colby Christmas, and happy holidays to you. How are you doing?
Hey, man. Isn't that Colby Christmas?
Is there a problem with that name, sir? That's a given name for my mother.
Sorry.
Is there a problem with that? I mean, RG3 is kind of a weird game, too. Okay, fine. If you don't like my name, we can go with. How about Jamaica Johnson? Is that fine? How about Jamaica Johnson? How's that sound, sir? That's my uncle's name. Would you like that name instead, sir? Let's move to something more substantial. Let's talk about the embarrassment of the Pittsburgh Panthers, the pencil dick, Mike Tomlin. Have you heard anything from the Pittsburgh Panthers, the Rooney families, for his behavior on Thanksgiving night? Have you heard anything from him at all?
I mean, listen, the guy.
No, have you? I have not. Here's the whole thing, sir. I like Tomlin, but his look on his face was laughter, showed me he didn't care. I think if the Rooneys were to came out Saturday morning and said little pencil dick is going to sit for four more weeks without pay, I don't think they'd be talking about draft choices right now. Because it's just like when the pimps prostitute the kids in pumpkin ball in college and they make their mistakes to get money on the table, you know, quote unquote, you're not supposed to know. They usually come out and say we'll take care of the problem. If the Rooneys would have said they embarrassed ourselves and our trophies in the Alex of Pittsburgh, I don't know about you, sir. I'm a student of the game of the National Football League and NHL. I could care about people, little man, pumpkin ball. But football was this. Look at pumpkin ball with Kid, with Brooke and Nancy's, with the water. At least he allocated. But I don't want to hear the word mistake out of his young hindcorners, that pencil dick out there. I want to hear a choice, and I need him to sit for the rest of the season because Pittsburgh Panthers are done.
All right, I hear what you're
saying. Go ahead.
Let me speak. Yeah.
Go ahead.
First of all, I wasn't making fun of your name. I was just
taking you
back.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Second about Pittsburgh. Let me speak here.
Go ahead.
Second thing about this. Mike Tomlin made a huge mistake, blunder,
choice.
Whatever you want to call it.
Choice.
Okay.
A mistake.
Fine.
Don't confuse the two. Don't confuse.
If you want to get rid of Mike Tomlin. If you want to get rid of Mike Tomlin, I'll tell you right now, Mike Tomlin will be out of a job for about 0.3 seconds.
I didn't say fire,
Tomlin,
I said suspend.
Stop. Hold on. I'll speak.
I'm just don't put words in my
Mike
mouth.
Mike Tomlin is one of the best young coaches in the league, and I will, as a Washington Redskins fan, if Mike Tomlin was gone, I would fly Mike Tomlin out to D.C. to come coach Washington Redskins. So,
do you think he has character?
Yes, I do think he has character.
You do?
I'm not going to judge. Listen, I'm not judging one. He made one mistake. Let's calm
choice.
Down. He made
choice.
Hey, one choice. Whatever you want to call it. Mistake, choice, whatever you want to call it. It's
well,
one
mistake. What's the mistake and choice? RG3 should be shut down. Shannon should fire his son. I mean, that's nepotism. His wife should suspend him. Don't defend him.
I'm not defending the choice he made. So let's call it. I'm not defending it at all. But I'm not
just said
fire
you said mistake
not,
twice.
Well, okay, choice. What is the difference?
The difference is
here?
Choice and mistake. A mistake is by accident, choice on purpose, right?
I mean, he
right?
made a choice. You,
all right,
choice.
Don't.
Okay,
mistake is mistakenly you transform numbers. I work in money, okay? I make some very dumb mistakes, but I'm very choosy how I choose when I in my life. I choose to marry a trophy wife and live a good life and got two podcasts. I chose to call your show, and I will take you to task on mistaken choice on him. I like him, too. He has no character. Let's move on again. Go ahead. I'm sorry, but I'm gonna call you out. Go ahead.
It's both.
No.
Okay, it's both
choice. Don't give it. No, you can't explain it away. You can't explain that away. Just like Menzel, inadvertent mistake. Are you kidding me? I'm sorry. You can't do that, sir. You want to be the denier of
Let me ask you a question. Do you want him gone?
Go ahead.
Fired?
I told you, I don't want to fire him. I want him suspended for the season. The thing, money buys power. Power gets money. 100K is not a lot of money, sir.
That, I don't know what that accomplishes, but, you know, fine.
He thinks about it with no money at home, about his behavior. Have you heard anything from the Rooney family for his behavior, yes or no?
I have not heard anything, to be honest.
That's the problem. He pay his salary, that 100K. I'm trying to get it through your thick head, sir. I'm not trying to be a jerk here. I need an answer from a fellow podcaster. And you said choice. You said mistake. I'm going to correct you because I have freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is a bitch. Look at Sarah the quitter from Wasilla. She's comparing slavery to debt. Sex slavery is out there. Do they have a choice? No. She made a choice to do something that was wrong. I'm sorry. You may think I'm a dink. You make fun of my name. But at the end of the day, it's about choices. I'm not telling you I want him fired. Look at the tired Santa Claus. He got fired from the Seabrook Shove and was hired in the Chicklets. Yes, he's a good coach. He's showing bad character, sir. Of a shield, I think you protect and so do I, right?
Listen, I'm not going to make this situation. I'm not going to turn this to like the kid that he committed a crime. And that's what
he didn't
mean
to commit a crime, sir. He ruined the shield of the National Football League.
You're not ruining the shield of the National Football League. Come on.
Yeah, he did. He stepped in the way of a player on purpose and is using the excuse of the jumbochrome. Maybe you want to do that. You want to be spectacular
no,
to spend time with Tampa.
There's
maybe a moldy insult like some penis breath. I don't know, sir. Step up.
There's no
step up and be
no,
a man's
no,
man
no
and call him out.
There's no excuse
what?
For what you did. I did call him out. There's no excuse for what he did.
You used mistake.
It's wrong.
That's
it
a Ben Condon
mode. It's a mistake. It's not a mistake.
Oh, please. My God. I suppose Joe Paterno made a mistake with not reporting pedophilia, and we are pedos and pieces of Penn State. I suppose that's a mistake, too, as well, when he didn't speak for children. Is that what you're going to say, too, about that situation as well?
That's a choice. That's both. Why can't it be both, a choice and a
no,
mistake?
No, because
it
he's one
be
or the other. One or the other.
No,
he made a choice to do what he did. Then you allocate. When you stand before a judge, I've had three people murdered by drunk drivers, sir. I was in a courtroom. And the guy allocated by mistake, I rose my hand. I said, can I please, in the allocation, say choice? It was my brother, okay? And I said, I'd like the a-hole to admit he made a choice to drink and drive. What would you do in the courtroom? Would you, if I was your brother or your friend and you were murdered, would you want me to step up and say, guy made a choice to drink and drive? He made a choice to kill my brother, and he made a choice to do what he did. Not a mistake. You look it up in the dictionary, sir. I assume you speak English. It's out there. Read the difference between choice and mistake, and you'll find out. I hate to be a jerk to you, but you went after my name from the beginning, and I'm going to call you out. You set the tone of this talk. Mr. Mike Tomlin, the pencil dick, made a choice and sullied the shield. He needs to sit for the season and think about it and come back next year and say, listen, I'm sorry for my behavior on national TV. I think a game they want to make a good game. That was a great game, the Bullies against the Pittsburgh Pansies, and he ruined it. Of stupid. Look at the smile on his face. You call that a mistake? Really? Please, don't be a pencil dick. Step up,
please.
Don't
bad.
Be a coward.
He looks bad with the situation. He looks bad.
He looks bad. Looks horrible. And they've done nothing to ruin it. That's why they take away their draft choices. Now they'll start speaking their money. Like in pumpkin ball and timber steps took away. Oh, that stupid pumpkin ball player took away his draft choice. Then they'll listen, sir. Then they'll listen.
They're not going to take away draft choices. They might take
away. That's what they're doing. That's what they're thinking of doing.
Maybe they will, because
if they would have said something, if you listen to me, by Saturday, they would have said, listen, just like with the pimps that prostitute young kids in pumpkin ball, young men in basketball, when they make their mistake paying the prostitutes, they get caught, they always say, we'll take care of the problem. And then the NCAA, the biggest people, the biggest pimps out there say, okay. If they would have went
Here's the thing about it. I think we would both agree on this. It should not have happened.
I agree.
It should not have happened.
You know what the get back line is? The get back line is. Don't the get back line? You get back. He knows that. If you ever watch NFL films, they call it the get back line. He knew that.
Guys,
that white chef is off limits.
They have coaches.
I know that. Pencil dick Mike Tomlin. Is a fool, okay? And I get it. I'm not trying to be a jerk on your podcast, but I'm just saying.
But now you're insulting the guy.
He insulted the NFL with a smile on his face, sir.
But he made
he's
one
a pencil
thing,
dick on my podcast.
Thing,
he's a pencil
dick. Please. Okay, it's one thing. Let's not go.
Oh, yeah, one thing, yeah. You cheat your wife once, right? Cut your penis off, no big deal.
It's one thing. We're not enough.
Yeah, one thing. Oh, my God. He's a pensive gentleman. I can't talk to one about a pensive dick like that. You be good. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Peace in the Middle East. Sir Perlin's a quitter, and he's a pensive dick. My God.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's how we end the show. That's how we end the show. I did not address the Mike Tomlin thing. Again, a lot happened over the Thanksgiving, holidays with sports and entertainment. Now listen, choice, mistake, but it's both. He actually is right from the standpoint that it was a choice. And even though we can't prove that it was a choice, he knows, coaches know better in terms of the get back rule and the jumbo try. It was a choice. So I do agree with him. And it's both. It's a choice and it's a mistake as well. Me saying that it's a mistake is not, you know, not making an excuse for what he did or not trying to, you know, be on the Mike Tomlin apologist list. But it's both. Now, should he be crucified for this? No. He should, you know, the $100,000 fine. This is a nice, hefty fine. And, you know, you want to suspend him a game? Fine. With no pay, fine. But the NFL chose not to do that. If you're the Rooney's, you're gonna sit him down for really the last four games of the season when you still have a chance to make the playoffs. So keep that in mind. And the call didn't want to mention that fact that Pittsburgh is not out of the playoff running for that sixth seed. They win 3 out of 4, or even their last four games, which is probably not gonna happen. They still have a chance to make that, you know, to get to 8-8 and 9-7, still have a chance to make the playoffs. So you're not sitting him down for four games with no pay. That's stupid. And, of course, you're not firing because he's one of the best young coaches in the league. Mike Tomlin, I can make a case, is the best young coach in the league. He's already been to 2 Super Bowls and won 1. So that's how we wrap up the program. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your sports Saturday. I will see you next week on the next edition of – on the NFL show and also the next edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. So long.